Welcome to Outrage Overload, a science podcast about outrage and lowering the temperature. This is episode 34. Many of us have experienced conversations turning toxic, perhaps with that angry uncle figure around the holidays. Or maybe it's a friend, colleague, or even just someone online whose views seem utterly incomprehensible. It feels like they're from a different planet, speaking a different language, and truly understanding their perspective seems impossible.
It was my dad. It was actually kind of hurt my parents' marriage. And then, yeah, he and I would get into, oh my God, raging arguments over it.
It happened to my wife because she's a Christian woman and she believes in, you know, no abortion and people are just canceling her.
What if there's a way to bridge the gap, not through shouting matches or social media rants, but through genuine understanding and respectful dialogue? That's the promise of Braver Angels, an organization that has repeatedly come up in prior episodes.
Braver Angels.
Braver Angels.
Braver Angels.
To dive deeper, I sat down with a leader at Braver Angels to understand their mission and explore how everyday folks can get involved in bridging the partisan divide.
My name is Luke Nathan Phillips. I am Publius Fellow for Public Discourse at Braver Angels, and I run operations of outreach to Policy World in Washington, D.C.
If you're like many listeners who express their deep concern about the state of democracy and how they're exhausted by the negativity, this conversation should be quite illuminating. So let's get to it right now. So Luke Nathan Phillips, thanks for making the time to come on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and banter about the scientific roots of various of our social questions present to us.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've kind of gone back and forth and had a couple of fits and starts trying to get this scheduled, so I'm glad you were able to make it. So, you know, Peter Coleman suggests to us that there are something like 8,000 sort of these bridge-building organizations in the U.S. trying to solve, you know, some of these bipartisan issues, including, I would say, this podcast. And Braver Angels is certainly one of the more prominent examples. Can you just tell the audience a little bit about Braver Angels and sort of the mission and how it works?
Sure thing. So many years ago, BC, before coronavirus, there was a little thing called the 2016 presidential election. And in the aftermath of the 2016 presidential election, renowned family therapist Bill Doherty and longstanding family policy activist David Blankenhorn, along with their dear friend David Lapp, went and got together 10 individuals who voted for Hillary Clinton and 10 individuals who voted for Donald Trump in the little town of South Lebanon, Ohio, put together a workshop based on the principles of marriage counseling and family therapy, ran it over the course of a couple days, about 3 weeks after the election, and were so pleased with the results and surprised to hear from the participants that there was desire to do more of these, that they decided to set up a whole national organization committed exclusively to helping Americans across the red, blue, political, cultural, social divide find value in each other without necessarily having to come to agreement on any issues or politics or anything whatsoever. And over the course of 2017, all the way to the pandemic year, the organization grew workshop by workshop, activist by activist, individual by individual, alliance by alliance. And then when the coronavirus hit and we all experienced the various traumas of the long year 2020 in their multiple social forms, Braver Angels started doing a lot of its programming online and became a truly national organization, delivering debates and workshops and trainings to people who, in a time when the nation was coming apart at the seams, both on TV and in the streets, we were one of the games in town that was working on one mission and one mission only, helping Americans of incredibly diverse political persuasions come to realize that they might not have a lot in common, but they can certainly, if they bring the right spirit to their conversations and if they bring the right process to their business together, they can find value in each other and not lose families over politics, even politics that cuts down to the very core of what the American regime and the American identity is, which we experienced again and again and again in the longer 2020. And since 2020, Braver Angels has done a variety of very local grassroots programs and online national programs and various institutional outreaches to particular sectors of society, all doing the same exact work in various different formats. And that same exact work is essentially bringing Americans to sit around in a circle and talk about their feelings about politics and not work on solving anything, but work on figuring out how to see each other as fellow citizens, regardless of whether they can have their way in politics or not. And our conviction is that that is something that will matter no matter what the tone of politics is, no matter who wins which election. And we have always found many great friends all around the country doing that same work. And we remain committed to doing it from now till the end of time. So,
awesome. So do you think there's a little bit of self-selecting going on? Like if somebody's gone down this path, have they already kind of said, well, I need to take some blame for this and move on? Or are you able to sort of flip people from, do you also observe that kind of mentality a little bit? And are you able to kind of flip people from that to see their adversaries as human?
I appreciate your bringing this up because this hits at one of the most important distinctions in deep old work. I think there's a lot of people who hear about bridge building or civility or depolarization or trust building work, and they imagine that it's more or less about reasonableness and political moderation and coming to a certain kind of like moderate understanding of things. And that certainly can be the case, but that is also not necessarily the case. In fact, some of the most polarized people I know are boring, mushy moderates who think they know everything and who might be at the exact center of any particular spectrum they have. But if they have contempt for extremists, and if they have contempt for extremists, I don't know, in both directions on both sides, or if they have contempt for other kinds of mushy moderates, they may well be the most moderate person in the world at a issues level, but they're also incredibly polarized. And depolarization, depol work is not a species of political work. It's a species of social work. And it's a species of social work that deals exclusively with emotions and practices for dealing with emotions. It's something that is far more spiritually close, I think, to the work of like Alcoholics Anonymous and the Boy Scouts of America, except for politics and for political polarization, than it is with any specific kind of like bipartisan solutions oriented kind of work. And so, you get to the paradox, right? Is it possible to have depolarized extremists on the very far right and very far left and very dead center sides of the spectrum? And the answer, of course, is yes, because if you can have a politics where even those whose whole politics is based on upending systems and bringing forth new eras or bringing back new eras or whatever, and their ideology is premised on those sorts of things, their political convictions are premised on those sorts of things, and yet they don't want to smash and destroy the people who they view as the enemy, and they are more than willing to live in a society with those who they view as every kind of political enemy, it's very possible to have basically trust-building civil discourse work there. And I think the interesting case studies internationally on this are not actually in what you might think of as policy at all. I'm always impressed when folks who do work in South Africa and in the Holy Land and in Northern Ireland and in any number of other major conflict zones come to us and they're like, wait, we didn't know Americans needed the work that we're doing. Why are you guys doing the work that we're doing? And it's because we want to preclude some of the things that those other places have gotten into. And we see the building of trust between people, whatever their ideological or cultural background is, as the essential thing in it.
And the challenge still seems to be that, I mean, are you finding that that's got a lasting effect? Like, there's the incentives in the world are so powerful to draw people into fighting again, right? I mean, so many people profit. Do you see that, or do you see this having a bit of a lasting effect?
Well, again, it's a species of social work, right? So any progress you might make in helping any individual or any community come to a higher level of social trust and a higher level of understanding of people who disagree with them is something that, as the tides of politics and history flow, can just as easily be drawn back. And so you have to continue to keep doing that work all the time. There's been a longstanding debate in depolarization world about like, well, what would a world without, what would a world where depolarization work was no longer needed, what would that look like? And a lot of people say, that's a world without conflict. That's a world where we've solved all the major conflicts and everybody gets along and is happy all the time and agrees on their 50% plus one solutions on most issues and doesn't fight each other acrimoniously. And like human nature being what it is, good luck finding that. I happen to very strongly believe that something resembling depolarization style trust building is something that benefits any conflict zone in any social circumstance whatsoever, no exceptions. And all Braver Angels does is cultivate a couple of sets of habits to get people at any level of society, in any level of how they are polarized and polarized over what, to be able to have a couple of those moments themselves, so that the hopelessness we have and the despair we have about our political situation is something that everybody knows there's a light on the other end of it.
So speaking to that, you know, talking about how it's kind of, there's this innate part of us. I mean, talking with neuroscientists and social psychologists and others, you know, they certainly point that out, that, you know, sort of democracy and compromise sort of go against a lot of our natural tendencies, you know, and many say sort of the question should not be, how did we become so polarized, but how did we ever not be polarized, right? Because it's such a natural tendency. But, you know, and it sounds, as far as I know, Braver Angels does work with, or potentially work with, politicians that are interested. So there's that level. But I don't think you're out there working sort of new legislation or things like that, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Also, to be entirely honest, I think one of our great failings in our work with politicians, and this is something that there's a lot of reasons for that aren't our fault entirely, but they are things that we are working to figure out how to address. The vast majority of politicians who are willing to come to anything in the Braver Politics Initiative and in Braver Angels' work in general tend to be people who you associate with as being kind of moderates of some sort, right? Which is fine. Moderates tend to be the ones most interested, of course, in the bipartisan and compromise-oriented aspects of it. But no one is really going to depolarize America. No one is really going to bring all Americans in on things unless you get, at the very least, the polarized mainstreams of American politics interested in and invested in depolarization work. And frankly, in civility work and bridge building work sometimes, but depolarization work in particular, because there's no specific policy component to it, those are the kinds of folks who it's most crucial to engage. It's also incredibly crucial to engage the actual extremes or the perceived extremes of the various political spectrums we have, because, like, again, if depolarization were to be only about civility and only about a certain kind of decorum that happens to correspond with a certain kind of centrism, you might be able to get good faith among centrists. You wouldn't be able to get good faith among people who need it most and people who probably have the most to offer because they tend to be most excluded from the centers of much of this decision-making, right? And it just opens up many, many opportunities to think on what the nature of politics is, which, for what it's worth, that's what I have always found most interesting personally about depolarization work, is that I think there's a quiet assumption in a lot of political advocacy that some people are friends, some people are enemies. If only we got our people in, we can govern and build a coalition that will last 50 years or whatever. And I think the far more interesting question is, if you cannot build a coalition that will last 50 years, if you cannot come to fundamental common top-down agreement, if you are forever condemned to the great, great plurality of opposed social and political groups in America that we are, if you're condemned to that, how can you possibly keep a country together and have it make sense? And I think if you're okay with it not making rational sense, there's actually a lot of ways you can go. And what's one of the best ways to do that? Surprisingly enough, family therapy. So that's some of the stuff we do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you point that out, because I have a challenge with this podcast often kind of communicating that lowering the temperature, or, you know, the work that I, or the goal that, where I'm headed is not necessarily like I want us to be all moderates or all centrists, right? That's not necessarily what I'm saying here, right? I want us to be moderate in our interaction with each other. Yes, I do want that, but not necessarily moderate in our positions. You can still have, you know, your position and you can hold to it. One challenge I often have on the podcast, because I always ask for some upbeat news or some ideas for how to improve things. And, you know, often it sort of comes across as sort of platitudes or cliche stuff. So I guess, you know, how are do you get some of that? And A, and then B, like sort of how are you measuring success? And it sounds like you were starting to scale and you've been scaling more by going online. Do you see, you know, a scaling opportunity there or a scaling challenge?
Yeah, so I think the main metrics at Braver Angels at the moment is measuring success are twofold. Number one is the classic one that we've done since 2017, which is the standard people coming out of a workshop or coming out of a debate fill out a form about how they felt about their opponents before the debate and how they felt about their opponents after the debate or after the workshop. And that's something that is... I mean, obviously, survey data has all kinds of problems with it. There's ways you can read it and misread it. And like the very definition of the questions kind of impacts the outcomes. But I mean, just at a level of common practice, we do that a lot. Additionally, I think the more important metric at this moment, at some level, I think we and the people who work with us and the volunteers who've dedicated years and years of their time with us, I think most of us trust that this work is worthwhile in a you know it when you see it kind of sense. Like when you're in a workshop or when you're chairing a debate, and there's one of those moments that could never ever happen in mainstream media and could never ever happen in a classroom setting. And then you see a moment of reconciliation or a moment of understanding between two Americans totally across the political aisle, probably across a couple other aisles, suddenly realize that they actually kind of like each other for political reasons, not just personal reasons, right? That's a beautiful thing. And those are hard to quantify. And myself here in Washington, D.C., one of the things I really enjoy the pleasure of doing is doing this kind of work, debates in particular, because that's what people are always interested in here, among the policy community, who a lot of people don't realize, people who work in policy world are just as polarized as people in the grassroots main streets of America. And in fact, the ways that polarization affects people my age who work for U.S. senators and think tank media offices, the way polarization affects them is sometimes even more pernicious than the way it affects their grandmothers in Peoria and St. Augustine, because here our very careers are tied up in it. There are things you're not allowed to say because it would make your boss look bad. There are people you're not allowed to approach or be seen with in public because it would make your boss look bad. That's just Washington, D.C. That's just politics. And it creates a kind of social pettiness that is understandable on a lot of key fronts, but it's just as polarizing as Proud Boys and Antifa beating each other up on the streets of Seattle, or a crazy uncle and his left-wing niece going at it against each other during Thanksgiving dinner. And so if you start with fundamental irreconcilable division and figure out ways to build something despite and within that fundamental irreconcilable division, then you've basically got Federalist number 10 applied to every domain of life. And I think that is just the most fascinating reflection of what democratic politics in America could possibly look like I've ever thought of, you know.
That's awesome. Well, I want to finish with, you know, so what would you suggest? Where should listeners start? I mean, I believe you work directly with individuals, right? So, I mean, there's a place for a listener to start. Or what would be some of the things you might say? Where should a listener start to find out more and also maybe get involved with Braver Angels?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to pitch. I appreciate it a lot. The biggest thing I'll say is that Braver Angels runs a whole heck of a lot of online events every week. And those are online events of various kinds. My personal favorites are the Braver Angels National Debates, which is a kind of parliamentary procedure oriented thing where everybody has the opportunity to talk and ask questions and pretend to be members of parliament in addressing the chair and all that sort of thing, which actually opens up a really, really fascinating level of discourse when you bring in all voices in the room and have them not talk directly to each other, but directly to the issue. Those are my personal favorites. If you get a chance to be in a Braver Angels debate on Zoom, That's usually the best. There's also a lot of book clubs going on all the time, film clubs going on all the time, and various workshops hosted by local alliances put online. So the two single biggest things I can tell you are, number one, go to some of our events online and get a sense of the community there. Number two, figure out what's happening in your local area and go to that. There's also other things you can do, right? You can, there's a whole heck of a lot of Braver Angels media products on our website, a lot of podcasts, a lot of videos of past events, and some written content that if you're interested in the theory work of this, please do feel free to go to that. There's a lot of excellent content there, but I cannot stress this enough. The single biggest thing about depolarization work is the same thing as the single biggest thing about democracy. It has to be person to person for it to mean anything. And so if you want to get out there and get into the action and get into the activism of helping reforge the bonds of social trust, the mystic cords of memory that have made America, America, and you want to do that in the context of Braver Angels, which I, in a very biased perspective, believe is one of the best ways you can do it. You really have to not just consume content. You really have to go create new realities with your fellow Americans, no matter where they are across the divide and how weird you might think their ideas are and how infuriating you might think their habits are. And yet there's something in them as your fellow citizen that you might just be tickled by. And so Braver Angels is committed to doing all these sorts of programs. And if you are interested in finding them, you can find them at braverangels.org. And we look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Well, Luke Nathan Phillips, thank you so much again for coming on the show. I really had a good time chatting with you.
Thank you for having me, David. And before we go, if there are ever any ways that Braver Angels can be useful to your show or useful to your listeners, do feel free to let us know. We're always looking for new friends all around the country. And you're doing some interesting and important work on the role of science in society. And that is something that will have to be as much a part of the solution to the current predicament of polarization as anything. So consider yourself a friend of ours, and we will look forward to working with you sometime soon.
Oh, that'd be great. All right, Luke, I really appreciate it. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me, David. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That is it for this episode of the Outrage Overload podcast. For links to everything we talked about on this episode, go to outrageoverload.net. I want to take a moment to thank those that have contributed to the show. Your support helps us cover costs to continue to improve the show and is greatly appreciated. For as little as $3 a month, you can become a subscriber to get access to exclusive subscriber-only content, sneak peeks into what's coming, behind-the-scenes exclusive content, and you can learn about upcoming guests in advance and even submit questions for the interview. Visit outrageoverload.net/contribute. Okay, see you in a few weeks.